May 14th. Calling Gene McGrath Forester formidable is like calling the Grand Canyon a big hole in the ground. It's not inaccurate, but it is certainly inadequate. The church secretary had her back to the door when I walked into the office this morning, so my first view was of her silvery cropped hair. Even from behind, I could tell it was a chic cut, not a, I don't care about how my hair looks anymore, so let's cut it all off, cut. It's funny how those two looks are separated by only a matter of degrees. Before I could say a word, and without turning around, she greeted me with a stern, yes, how may I help you? In diary, for a moment I completely forgot why I was there. Gene McGrath Forester has that kind of voice. Not unkind or uncaring, but one which lets you know that this is a woman who doesn't suffer fools gladly. It's the kind of voice that always makes me feel, well, foolish. I end up sputtering or blabbering on. I think it's an animal instinct, a way of saying, I recognize your dominance. Please don't eat me. The good thing about being older is that sometimes I catch myself before I transition into a complete idiot. I remember that short and simple wins the race. Such was the case this morning, thank goodness. I'm looking for Gene Forester, I said. My name is Marnie Fetzer. The silver-headed woman quickly swiveled around to face me. I'm Gene. What can I do for you? By this time, I'd seen plenty of photographs of Maisie Baker McGrath, and so I can say with some certainty that her daughter looked just like her. High forehead, aquiline nose, and a touch of mischief in her eyes. I had a speech planned about the quilt museum and my interest in local quilt history and how important her mother's legacy was, etc., etc. I'd practiced it in the car on the ride over. But when I opened my mouth, all that came out was, I'd like to meet Maisie McGrath. I'm afraid my mother doesn't care much for new people, Jean told me and turned back to her computer. She's almost 100, you know. She says her team roster is full. It's just that, well, I'm on the quilt museum committee. Did you know that Milton Falls is going to have a quilt museum? And it would be so wonderful. Jean held up a hand to cut me off. I'm sure it would be wonderful, whatever scenario you're dreaming of. But Mom has limited energy these days, and she spends most of it on making quilts and texting with her great-grandchildren. She still makes quilts? She does, Jean said with a curt nod. And they're quite stunning, but they're not made for public consumption, so don't get any ideas about that. Just then, Father Travis walked in. Good morning, Marnie. I see you've met Mrs. Forester. She wants to meet Mom, Jean reported over her shoulder. I told her it's not possible. Father Travis picked up a pile of mail and started going through it. And why is that, Mrs. Forester? My mother is 100 years old, and she still has quilts to make. You know how it is. She only has time for two things. Her quilts and her great-grandchildren, Father Travis finished. I know. I have to beg her to come to the Tuesday service we do at Ashland Woods, and half the time she refuses because she's working on a quilt and can't be bothered. But Marnie is a quilter, you see, and she's very interested in Milton Falls quilt history. Jean turned all the way around again to face Father Travis. If you know how Mom is, then why are you forcing the issue? I guess because I believe in miracles, Father Travis replied, grinning. I also think your mother is a genius, and she should have her quilts hanging in the quilt museum. I'm not disagreeing with you, Jean said, but I'm a realistic woman, and... She stopped mid-sentence and stared at me. Did you say your name was Marnie Fetzer? I nodded mutely. I felt afraid. Very afraid. Mrs. Fetzer, the third grade teacher? Milton Falls Elementary? I nodded again. Jean started to laugh. Do you remember Daniel Forester? Danny? He would have been in third grade in, let's see, in the late 1980s. He was in your class. I remember it because of the class play that year. Who will bell the cat? Danny played the head mouse. I've probably got a photo on my phone. My husband, Walt, scanned all of our family photos and put them in an album on the cloud. It took him a year. It was as though she had been transformed. I glanced at Father Travis, who winked at me, like, now we're getting somewhere. You know, I'm sure Mom came to that play. She came to all of the kids' performances and recitals. World's best grandmother and all that. Okay, here we are. Jean passed her phone to me. The first photo is of the whole class, and then the next one is of Danny. Oh, he adored you. He was my youngest and always had a tendency to fall in love at the drop of a hat. I looked at the first photo, and there we were, Mrs. Fetzer's fantastic foxes lined up in front of the chalkboard. Most of the kids were dressed as mice, and I was dressed as a rat, which the kids loved. Danny's the tall boy underneath the flag, Jean told me. His mouse ears are about to slip off of his head. Oh, I remember Danny Forrester, I exclaimed, and I really did. He'd had a little boy crush on me and used to give me ho-hos. They came in packs of two, and he'd eat one and then bring me the other one. I remember debating with him about the best way to eat a ho-ho. It has always been my belief that one peels the layer of chocolate off of the outside of the ho-ho, unrolls the ho-ho, daintily licks up the cream, and then eats the cake. Danny was a proponent of shoving the whole thing in your mouth all at once. We ultimately had to agree to disagree. I looked up at Jean. He was a wonderful little boy, but I'm afraid I lost track of him once he went to middle school. How's he doing? Jean smiled at me, her first real smile of the morning. He's wonderful. Lives in Akron, has two beautiful children, and a wife I like well enough. Oh, and he's a teacher. Fifth grade. He loves it. And he's good at it, too. By that time, I was on the verge of tears. I love hearing about my old students, especially the ones I loved. And more than anything, I love hearing about students who grew up to become teachers, the world's greatest and most demanding profession. Getting the update on Danny almost made up for the fact that I was never going to meet his grandmother. Or so I thought. What are you doing next Tuesday afternoon at 2 p.m.? Jean asked. Turning to her computer again, I saw that she'd pulled up Google Calendar. Nothing that I know of. Meet me here, then, and I'll drive you over to Ashland to meet Mom. She turned back around. Don't worry. I'll let her know that you were Danny's teacher. Between you and me and the doorframe, Danny was always her favorite. Father Travis clapped his hands. Excellent. Sorted. Then he sighed. And now I'm off to meet with the vestry. Do you need me to be there to keep Anita Gibbs under control? Jean asked. No, I suppose not, Father Travis said, although he didn't sound too sure of himself. Besides, maybe she won't be at today's meeting. Oh, she's already here, Jean said, and then she turned back to her computer and gave a wave of her hand. Off with you both now. Mrs. Fetzer, I'll see you on Tuesday, promptly at 2 o'clock. When she says promptly, she means promptly, Father Travis whispered to me on the way out. I'd be here at 1:55 if I were you. Oh, I will be, I thought. Believe you me. May 20th. We need to discuss Daryl's studio. It's been 5 months since Daryl first came up with the idea of building a studio out back. It wasn't until March that he actually started drawing up the plans. At the beginning of April, he met with an architect to go over the plans, and at the end of April, he met with a contractor for advice on various aspects of building the studio. The contractor's name was Colin, and the first thing he advised Daryl to do was, of course, hire a contractor, namely Colin. I have mixed feelings about this because I have mixed feelings about contractors in general. They are the poets of the building world, coming and going as inspiration moves them, showing up at all hours, sometimes staying for only a minute, other days practically moving in with you, and of course, for long stretches of time, not showing up at all. They never do what they say they're going to do, but when they sit across the table from you, spinning their amazing tales, you believe every single word. They're dreamers and schemers. They're often disturbingly attractive. They're bad but irresistible boyfriends. I try to avoid them at all costs, which, by and large, I've been able to do. We haven't done any major renovations on the house in 20 years, other than adding on the screen porch, an episode I still haven't recovered from and won't relive here for fear of post-traumatic stress. Colin is in his early 40s and drives the biggest pickup truck I have ever seen in my life. He calls Daryl bro and man and dude, and in general makes it all sound like he can't believe how lucky he is to be working with someone as knowledgeable as Daryl is about construction. Daryl is lapping it up. In another life, he's telling himself, he could have been Colin, with the truck and the biceps and the tool belt. Anyway, Daryl had hoped the studio would be up and running by June 1st, and maybe if he were doing it himself as originally planned, it would be. But now we've got Colin running the show, and I can see this stretching out for months, possibly years. I will say one thing. I'm writing this at the kitchen table as I'm watching a guy on a smallish tractor digging out the foundation for the studio. He started 20 minutes ago and is just about finished, from what I can see. It would have taken Daryl at least a day and probably three to do the same job, and his knees and back would have been shot when he was done. If I haven't complained about Daryl hiring a contractor and making this job a lot more complicated and expensive than it might have been, that's why. Daryl's in good shape for his age, but his age is 64, same as mine, and I know from experience that at 64, you can shift your weight from one hip to another while waiting to give your Starbucks order, and all of a sudden your knee gives out and you have to limp back to the car. You can even injure yourself quilting. I picked up an old hand-piecing project a couple of weeks ago, and within 15 minutes remembered why I abandoned it in the first place. My elbow started to hurt from making tiny stitches, and I got a headache from squinting, even though I was wearing my glasses. In a minute, I'm going to give up my role as spectator and head to my sewing room. I've been working on my quilt for the Peacemaker's Fall show, and I've only got 2 weeks to finish it. After my foray into modern quilting last year, I've decided to do a traditional quilt this year, inspired by my perusal of Ohio quilters and their own voices. In her interview, a woman named Darcy McLean talked about a red and white wagon wheels quilt that she made in the 1920s, and as soon as I saw the photo, I fell in love, especially when I read the full story behind it. She'd made the quilt as a young bride after moving from her home state of New York to Cincinnati, Ohio. She'd been sad about leaving home, but her new husband got a good job in Cincinnati, so she didn't have any choice. As a way to cheer herself up, she pretended she was a pioneer setting out on a westward journey, hence the choice of the wagon wheel pattern. She said she'd gotten so caught up in her make-believe world that she was a little surprised when they finally got to their new home, and it wasn't a cabin in the middle of a prairie. I was so charmed by that story that I was immediately inspired to make my own wagon wheel quilt, though I don't have any plans to head west in a covered wagon anytime soon, or ever. It's a fairly simple pattern, but one with a lot of graphic impact. My version is tangerine and white, and I think I'm going to put it in the guest bedroom after the show. Of course, if I'm going to use the guest bedroom to showcase my quilts, I probably should paint it. Which means Daryl should probably paint it, because he's a much better painter than I am. But I don't think Daryl's going to be working on anything other than his studio for the next few months. I wonder if he's entering a quilt into QuiltCon this year. You know, it just occurred to me that he missed the Modern Quilters meeting this month. That's unusual. He loves his meetings, and he recently made a new guy quilter friend there. The guy's name is Walker, and his Instagram moniker is Brad's Dad. Why do I remember this? Because Brad is short for Bradison. I've known Madisons and one Addison, but I have never ever met a Bradison, who, by the way, is called Bradison, never Brad, no matter what his dad's handle is. No one under the age of 40 goes by the short form of their names anymore. There are no more Bobs, and it's pretty rare to meet a young Rob, though it can happen. No Daves, only Davids. No Dans, no Mikes. My high school and college careers were filled with Bobs and Mikes and Steves and Jims. Now the Jims are all James. I'm not complaining. Things change. Still, I'm glad that Sam hasn't decided to become a Samuel or Kate a Catherine. My deep, dark secret is that my real name is Mary Ann. Every once in a while, this comes up on official documents, and it always takes Daryl by surprise, even though he's known my real name is Mary Ann for over 45 years now. How I became Marnie is that old story of toddler name mangling. Janet was 2.5 when I was born, and for some reason, Mary Ann was beyond her. She started calling me Marnie, and soon everyone was calling me Marnie. I think I must have been 4 or 5 when I realized my name wasn't Marnie. It was a strange moment. I couldn't figure out why my parents had been calling me the wrong name for my entire life. Did they not know my real name? Interestingly, people are often shocked when they find out my real name is Mary Ann. Apparently, I don't look like a Mary Ann. I suspect some of my friends are imagining Mary Ann from Gilligan's Island, who sadly I don't resemble in the least. Although, like Gilligan's Mary Ann, I was always the cute one. Being a ginger was beyond me. I could never pull off sexy, and I never really tried. But cute got me Daryl, so I'm not complaining. Okay, I feel very silly writing about this stuff. But since I am, let me point out that I recently saw Now and Then photos of Mary Ann and Ginger, and I am here to report that Mary Ann aged amazingly well. The actress who played her, I mean. Ginger, on the other hand, not so much. So that's today's takeaway, diary. Cute lasts. You heard it here first. Thank you so much for listening to Diary of a Mad Quilter and for being a Story Guild subscriber. Keep tuning in for more quilt fiction and more quilty fun.